Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. President Trump on Tuesday gave his most urgent warning yet about the coronavirus, reversing weeks spent downplaying the danger. The pandemic is squeezing the life out of the economy. 6.6 million Americans filed for unemployment last week alone. In a rare show of unity, Congress passed a $2 trillion relief package, but some governors are calling for even more. And the U.S. remains way behind other countries in testing for the virus. Against this backdrop, a presidential election looms. Veteran political journalist Ken Rudin is the host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. Welcome back, Ken.
Good morning. Good morning, Ann.
So how do we talk about politics in a time of not only a pandemic, but an unprecedented experience of a pandemic?
Well, the goal here, obviously, is not to equate talk about how important elections are, how important politics is, because obviously we're talking about life and death situations throughout every other conversation we're having. But the fact is that we are in the middle of a presidential campaign. If we had a campaign in 1864 in the midst of the Civil War, if we had it in 1944 in the midst of World War II, if we had it in 1932 in the midst of the Great Depression, so the election doesn't go away. The politics doesn't stop. So we're not raising the importance of politics to what's going on around the world with the virus. But at the same time, how could you ignore it? Because the November date is staring us in the face. There is a presidential election coming up in November.
I mean, I guess the big difference between all those dates that you just mentioned and today is that today we're used to this 24/7 news cycle, blah, 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 social media. Back then, the politics didn't get that intense until closer to the election, except in the political circles such as they were.
Well, that is absolutely true. I mean, of course, we are right now, the moment that the 2016 election was over, the day after, we were talking about Donald Trump's re-election battle in 2020. In fact, I think he filed for re-election within days of him being sworn in. So there's truth. I mean, this is an ongoing, nonstop thing. But the fact is that we are seeing unprecedented changes, either suggested or actualized, in this process. I mean, we've seen many states, including Ohio, pushing off its primary because, you know, why risk the health of people coming out to vote when there's such, you know, risks with the catching the virus? And now we also have conventions coming up this summer. We have the Democratic Convention as soon as July 13th to the 16th. Do the Democrats get together in Milwaukee and thousands of them within close proximity of each other? My guess is that's probably not going to happen. And we could always talk about what's the purpose of conventions now anyway, since we do seem to anoint candidates well before the delegates get together. But these are just new questions that we've never had to answer before.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking politics today in time of pandemic with Ken Rudin, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. If you have a question or comment for Ken, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So I'm wondering, you know, is it fair to judge our elected officials during a crisis like this?
Oh, my goodness. Absolutely. I mean, this is exactly when we're supposed to judge our officials. How do they respond in times of an emergency, in times of a crisis? Now, if you ask President Trump, he'll say, I deserve a 10, an A plus, because I've been right about this crisis from the beginning. And the fact is, he has not. I mean, yes, more and more Americans are giving him higher marks for his daily press briefings. And yes, he is probably taking this more seriously than he ever did before. But as recently as a week or two ago, he was comparing it to the flu. A week ago, even now, some of his allies are saying, well, you know, even if he didn't take it seriously, it's because he was distracted by the impeachment saga, the fake impeachment saga. And then even before that, he was saying, well, you know, what about where was Obama during the H1N1 virus in 2009? So there's so many finger pointing that the president has been so good with. So yes, he's doing fine now. But when all is said and done, there is a grade he needs to be receive from the American public, and whether he took this crisis as seriously as he should have.
Right, because I mean, a lot of countries they're not Democratic Republics like ours is. I mean, that's part of the deal is we have to do this.
Well, the fact is, if you go beyond the president of the United States, if you look at our governors, Democrats and Republicans have responded to this crisis much differently, with much more severity, with much more seriousness. We've seen Andrew Cuomo of New York, a Democrat, Larry Hogan of Maryland, a Republican, Mike DeWine of Ohio, a Republican, Gavin Newsom of California, a Democrat. Many of these governors, regardless of whether they're D's or R's, have responded to this much more strongly, much more strenuously, with much more urgency than the president of the United States.
The president has referred to himself as a wartime president, and I'm wondering, is there a political advantage in all of that? Does a wartime president get any kind of pass?
He's not asking for a pass, and nobody's suggesting he has a pass, but what he is trying to do is that the nation, I think one of the reasons he's talked about so many optimistic things like, well, the government will return, you know, everything will be back to normal as of Easter, and he says, well, it's because I want to be the optimist in chief, and I understand that, but you also have to be the realist in chief. The fact that as recently as a couple of weeks ago, we were still seeing crowds of kids congregating on the beaches of Florida, yeah, because their governor, Ron DeSantis, was taking his cues from the president of the United States and not talking about the urgency and severity of the virus. This is almost criminal. The fact that so many other countries have been taking very strict measures about quarantines and things like that, and you see kids frolicking on the beach, and you see some kids being interviewed on network news saying, I don't care if I get the coronavirus, I want to party. Mm-hmm. Now, this is just beyond belief. Do you blame the governor? Do you blame Trump? Do you blame their parents? But the fact is that so many people were not taking it as serious as they should have. And I suspect that, not that I want to just, you know, point fingers and blame, but had Fox News and the host of Fox News and the president of the United States and many Republicans taken this more seriously earlier, we perhaps would not have been in the situation we're in now.
He sounded the alarm. The first time I really felt like he was sounding an alarm about the pandemic on Tuesday, when he was saying how many people might die, up as many as 250,000 in the United States. And then on Wednesday, he switches gears to the war on drugs and the wall. And I'm just wondering, what in the world is the messaging there?
Not only that, but even when you're looking at the daily briefings, and I suspect that one of the reasons you're seeing him go so aggressively in daily briefings is because he's no longer allowed to have his rallies,
right,
where he rallies the troops. And so maybe he can rally them from the stage at a White House briefing. But even at these press briefings, he will still attack the press for asking nasty questions. I mean, when Peter Alexander of NBC News, yeah, basically sends him a softball question, Mr. President, what message do you have to the American people? And he says, don't ask, you know, how dare you ask this question? You're a lousy reporter, a terrible reporter. You're part of the fake news and the destructive news. What the message I get from that is that you're not allowed to question anything he's ever done, anything he's ever said. And the fact that just now, the fact that he wants to say that I've been right about this from the beginning, that doesn't allow him to rewrite the history, mm-hmm, of what he's done, which is not take this as seriously as so many people have suggested. And the fact that Anthony Fauci, well, my goodness, what would we do without Anthony Fauci? The fact that Anthony Fauci is getting death threats and needs protection because he's dared to make faces when the president has said something that is clearly wrong at these press briefings, that is a terrible signal that we're sending to the country.
Let's see, Charles in London, you're on the air. Hi, Charles.
Make make 2 points, is that I don't hear anybody on either side, Democrat or Republican, talking about PPE, which is personal protective equipment for poll workers, or the fact that we need to figure out a way and how progressive policies instead of voter suppression policies saved Washington, the state of Washington, from a cascade of their COVID-19 outbreaks because they voted by mail. And these are common sense things in today's, you know, technology in today's world. And the other thing is, why can I send a Bitcoin from, you know, from Franklin County, Ohio, all the way to Frankfurt, Germany, and it has the validity of any currency on the face of the earth, but we can't talk about the fact that with blockchain security technology that we should be able to send a vote to the Secretary of State from, you know, any place in the state, or to the electors committee any place in the state, and about Trump.
Charles, I want to talk about what you're saying there. I mean, among other things that the coronavirus is forcing us to do is, you know, look at our technology when it comes to healthcare. We've been talking about that all week, and Ken Rudin looking at our voting technology as well.
Charles makes two very important points. First of all, I mean, I don't know how to respond to talking about Bitcoin, but let me talk about the other two things regarding voting. First of all, the health and security of our election workers are absolutely paramount. And the fact is that, and we saw this, you know, to come to a forefront basically, you know, last month when on the same day Ohio decided not to go ahead with its primary, and because of risks. And Illinois, which did not have protection for its workers, you know, health protection for its workers, it did not keep voters 10 feet away from each other. It did not have sanitary conditions, enough cleaning supplies for the polling sites. I mean, that was just unacceptable. And the fact that they went ahead with the primary anyway is part of a larger controversy. And the fact is that on April 7th, which is next Tuesday, Wisconsin is still planning to hold this primary, even though everybody is saying this would be very risky. As far as voting by mail, you're absolutely right. That may be the way of the future, and the future may be closer than we imagined. There are states like Washington and Oregon and Colorado and others who vote, if not mostly, exclusively by mail, and they've had no problems with it. And given the fact that the fact is that last month we had a primary in Florida, whereas at the same time everybody's saying, please stay home, at least the seniors, please make sure the seniors stay home because of a risk. And yet they're also urging them to go out and vote, which is almost unconscionable. So I think Charles is onto something very important. And the fact is the way of the future, at least in 2020, it may be that vote by mail is the only way we can salvage this democracy. The only problem is that it's extremely expensive. A lot of states are not prepared for it.
Right.
But you know, things got to, you know, you got to make these adjustments.
Charles, thanks for that call. We appreciate it. And Arthur in Westerville, you're on the air. Arthur?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi.
I just wanted to note that this demonstrates that we're wide open to a concerted bioterrorist or state-sponsored terrorist attack. As bad as this is, there are really nasty bugs that could be put into a biological attack, and if they broke out in our cities, a number of cities all at once, the government's obviously unprepared to deal with that. Neither party has seriously addressed that. We had the individual who unleashed the anthrax after the September 11th attacks, and down in Lancaster, Ohio, which is close to Columbus, we had this gentleman who tried to get a hold of bubonic plague bacillus. He was some kind of a white nationalist. However, one of these times, somebody who really knows what they're doing could do this. I'll get off the air. Neither party really dealt with this.
Arthur, thanks for that call.
You know what Arthur's talking about is the kind of thing we've seen in these these science fiction movies for all these years that somebody unleashes some kind of a bioterrorist weapon and then nobody's prepared for it. And it was always science fiction until now. It's kind of remarkable. The fact is that this what we're seeing right now with the COVID-19 virus, that anything is possible and nobody is prepared for it. And of course, as Anne, as you said at the beginning of the show, this is far beyond just elections. It's just about eating and breathing and the sanctity and the safety of our food. Mm-hmm. So it's clear that we're not prepared. And again, this is not a D or an R problem. Mm-hmm. It's a government problem. And the fact is, again, if we want to talk about facts, 2 years ago, the president of the United States got rid of the entire pandemic team.
Right.
They just got rid of it. And now to say that the president is blaming Obama, and the fact is that he's prepared and previous government, you know, every statement he makes, it always refers to, when I came into office, I inherited a terrible mess and we're doing things that nobody else did before. And there's truth to that, but a lot of the reasons they're doing things that some of the things that he's doing was not especially beneficial to the country.
I think it was the Georgia governor, though. I'm kind of astounded by this. Correct me. He's Georgia or the Florida governor who's now made executive orders to keep people home and that kind of a thing, said they really didn't realize that you could pass the virus without having symptoms showing. You know, you could be asymptomatic and still pass the virus. And I'm thinking, what rock have you been sleeping under?
You know something?
How do they even utter stuff like that out loud, Ken? I mean, it's absurd.
I know. It seems like I'm picking on the tip of the same subjects all the time. But the fact is that if you go through the history of what we've been hearing on Fox News, not everybody on Fox News, we have, you know, Tucker Carlson has sounded some alarms earlier than others. But if you listen to Hannity, if you listen to Trish Regan, who was fired from Fox from saying these outlandish things, they were saying it's nothing to worry about. It's just like the flu. And in fact, the flu causes 84 to 100,000 deaths every year. So it's not a big deal. How many times did we hear "not a big deal" over and over again? Devin Nunes, the Republican ranking member on the House Intelligence Committee, and the thought of saying Devin Nunes and intelligence in the same sentence is kind of a stretch. But the fact is, he was talking about it recently. Well, you know something, let's go to restaurants now because they're not crowded and they need our business. President Trump was talking about as recently as 10 days ago, we're going to reopen everything by Easter. Let's go to the churches in Easter. Let's fill the churches. And people watch this on television, not just Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, but everybody else watches these things on TV and said, well, it's just a Democrat/media hoax trying to endanger the president's reelection hopes and chances in November, and I'm just not going to take it seriously. The thought, I can't get over this, and this is not even about politics, the thought of those crowds of kids on the beaches in Florida, right, you know, just frolicking, and, you know, we're going to see the consequences of that within days. And for many of us, we're yelling at the TV, what are you doing? But I guess nobody heard, or very few people heard.
We're going to continue our conversation with Ken Rudin, political journalist, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. We'll post a link to that on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@WOSU.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about politics in the time of pandemic with my guest, Ken Rudin, political journalist, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast and a regular on the show. If you have a question or comment for Ken, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Gosh, where do I start, Ken? I wanted to talk about the race itself. Let's talk about the Democratic primary race right now. Joe Biden.
We keep thinking about everybody who's been affected by this, and politically there are victims as well, and perhaps nobody greater than Joe Biden. The fact is that starting in South Carolina at the end of February, he was on this ride, which, you know, we were talking about how do you stop Bernie Sanders, or who does Bernie Sanders pick as his running mate? Uh-huh. And then suddenly we're not talking about Bernie Sanders anymore. The introduction of African-American voters starting in South Carolina at the end of February, going through Super Tuesday and the subsequent primaries, Joe Biden has... He was left for dead politically, and now he's the all but certain Democratic nominee. But who is talking about Joe Biden anymore? Nobody. And of course, the president has the advantage, because whenever we're in a crisis, you look to the commander in chief, and the president is on television every day. But Joe Biden has hardly been seen. I've seen so many references to, well, you know, that Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York, mm-hmm. maybe he should be the Democratic nominee because he's so omnipresent and he's so, you know, he's doing such a good job and I feel so good about him. I mean, nobody, you know, I mean, on my Political Junkie podcast this week, I talk about that. Yes, Adlai Stevenson did show up at the 1952 convention as a non-candidate, and he walked out as a nominee. But this doesn't happen anymore. You have to earn the nomination through delegates. And as far as I know, Andrew Cuomo is not running for president. And plus the fact that, you know, it's just like George Bush on 9/11. On 9/10, George W. Bush was a president with maybe a 50% or less or under approval rating.
Yeah.
And suddenly on 9/11, for obvious reasons, he became, you know, his numbers zoomed up. The same with Andrew Cuomo was not, he's nobody's favorite guy. He's not a likable person. He can be very prickly. He can have the battles with the media. He can, you know, search out for his enemies as well as Donald Trump can. But in a crisis, we see people who have risen to the occasion and those who have not. And Andrew Cuomo seems to have risen to the occasion there.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Let's turn to Neil right now in Columbus. Hi, Neil. You're on the air.
Hello, Ann. I was driving in my car and listening to your, not the host, but the, I forgot
Ken Rudin.
His name.
Yep.
Ken, yes, and I guess I am in an agreement to some degree that maybe we could have started this earlier to combat the virus, and maybe the president could have started somewhat sooner, but I just didn't hear anything positive from him about what could have been done better versus all of the negative comments I heard from him.
You're hearing a lot of negative comments because as the president was dismissing the severity of the virus, you had a lot of governors saying, wait a second, why is the president ignoring this? Why is Fox News ignoring this? And so, look, I listened to the president very closely on Tuesday night. He was very serious. He was warning the American people. He was talking about the threats. He was saying that it's going to get worse before it gets better. And I think absolutely, he said all the right things. My problem with it is that for so long, he was just, I don't know if he was parroting Fox News or Fox News was parroting him, but the fact is they were saying it was not a big deal. It was a conspiracy by the Democrats and the media to hurt him for re-election. He said this over and over again. I can send you and I can show you countless numbers of times where he said, well, look, a lot of people died from the flu as well. So, and maybe it's time to go out to restaurants.
Well, and also, I mean, the thing is that scientifically, we know that every day we put off dealing with the reality of the situation is we know that more people get infected, period.
And so yes, is he doing the right thing now? Yes, but it's like saying, well, you know, it's like saying we ignored everything about Pearl Harbor until December 7th, 1941, and then afterwards we did a great job, but What about leading up to it? I mean, of course, a pandemic is not the same thing as Pearl Harbor, but the fact is that there were opportunities for the president to have. What about the ventilator? Why are the states still having trouble getting masks and ventilators? Why didn't that start earlier? Why are there so many thousands of ventilators that have not been repaired, have not been serviced, and are still in factories or in warehouses not working? These are the kind of things that, even if it was a month earlier, let alone 2 months earlier, I think it would have saved a lot of lives. I really do. And so when I still watch, as recently as mid-March, when I see the president somehow dismissing it or not considering the severity of it and seeing the same thing parroted by his supporters on television and in Congress, it enrages me. So, yes, you're not hearing great things about the president, because I kind of think that he missed a golden opportunity, if not 2 months ago, at least a month ago, to say what Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birx and others have been saying, saying this is a severe pandemic. We've got to take action now. I'm sorry, Neil. I'm not here to bash the president. I'm just here really to just bemoan the fact that we lost a great opportunity, and I think many more will have caught the virus and will have died because of it.
Neil, thanks for that call. 614-292-8513 is the number to call if you have a question or comment for my guest. Talking politics and public policy with Ken Rudin, political journalist and host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. Mark and Powell, you're on the air. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Ann. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was listening to Sean Hannity's radio show last night. He was interviewing Bill O'Reilly. Bill O'Reilly was making it sound like he had inside information about Joe Biden and the people making decisions in Democratic circles are concerned about his cognitive decline, and his speculation was that Biden was going to defer his candidacy to Cuomo. And I was just wondering if you had any thoughts on that.
Yeah. Well, you know something, I'm smiling here, and I understand, look, just as the Democrats were getting so excited about William Weld and Joe Walsh and Mark Sanford and other Republicans who were challenging Trump, when we all knew that they had no shot at the nomination, but Democrats were so excited, Republicans are now saying, well, you know something, that Andrew Cuomo, I think he really has a shot at the nomination. Trump went on Fox and Friends because obviously he is so concerned with the virus that he has time to go on Fox and Friends for nearly every day. But he said, you know something, I really think that Cuomo is a much better candidate than Sleepy Joe. I understand that. But the fact is, there was once a point, one of the reasons that Joe Biden was being written off when he was, is not only because he was not getting votes, he got clobbered in Iowa and New Hampshire and finished a weak second in Nevada, but he was just looking not up to par, up to speed. And look, he's 77 years old. So I think, Mark, I'm not dismissing the fact that there are concerns about Joe Biden. The fact is, I think that one of the reasons the Democratic Party has united behind him is not because they love Joe Biden. I think they just want Donald Trump defeated. And they also felt that Bernie Sanders was not the guy who could do it. So I think that's a combination of it. But I've seen a lot of things. I agree with you. I mean, it's not just Hannity. I've seen a lot of things about you know, just like, look, with Hillary Clinton in 2016, the Republicans were always talking about when she collapsed that time on the time she was going to her car. I think it was at a 9/11 remembrance ceremony. I think she collapsed because she had pneumonia. Everybody was saying that she was dying. I mean, I saw that all over. Hillary Clinton is dying and it's time to get rid of her and get a new candidate. That's what the Republicans did in 2016. That's what they're doing again in 2020 when it comes to Joe Biden. Joe Biden is not going to give up the nomination. He's wanted to be president. I mean, the first time he ran for president was 1987. That's what, 30 plus years ago, and he's not going to give it up anytime soon. Are there concerns about his thought processes and his age? It's a legitimate concern, but You know, I think that Joe Biden has shown a better version of him in the last month than he has in the first 6 months of his candidacy.
Thanks, Mark. Appreciate that call. We've heard a lot now for a couple weeks, nothing from any camp except Trump. But we've been hearing increasingly from Bernie Sanders. I think a lot of the issues facing Americans because of the pandemic, the unemployment, the lack of security, the lack of health care again that we're faced with, plays into a lot of the issues he's strong on or has very strong policies on. Less so from Joe Biden, though, I've noticed, until like just the last day or so, he's calling for a debate, a virtual debate or whatever, online debate with Donald Trump in the fall. And also he has called to have the Democratic
convention
moved to early September, I think, from July.
I heard August, but yeah.
But no, right, it might be August. I apologize. But so what about that? I mean, it sounds like they're kind of coming out now. They feel like they can start talking politics again?
Well, they certainly Joe Biden wants to talk politics. He wants to be relevant.
Sure.
Remember that line about Bill Clinton in 1995. He said, "You know, I no longer feel relevant again." And then came Oklahoma City, and suddenly he became relevant. But the fact is that you would think that given the fact that Bernie Sanders has focused so much on health policies and affordability and things and unemployment and you know workers' benefits and things like that. You think this would be a good time, I use the term good loosely, but a time that Bernie Sanders could benefit from this talk about the virus and all that stuff. But the fact is that I think that the American people had their, you know, after those final debates and certainly since South Carolina and Super Tuesday and the two succeeding weeks after Super Tuesday, voters made it clear that Bernie Sanders was not the person they wanted. I think when there was a big field, when there were eight candidates running, let alone 24, but when there were eight candidates running, you know, he could win. He could do very well in Iowa. He could win New Hampshire, even though by very, very narrowly. But as it got close to the to crunch time, when voters wanted to see who they felt that could beat the president, clearly they wanted to not go to Bernie Sanders and go to Joe Biden. And that's sad for Sanders. I mean, Sanders had been, for much of his political career, an asterisk. He would run as a candidate of the Liberty Union Party in Vermont and run for governor, and he'd run for senator, and he'd get 2% of the vote, 6% of the vote. Then he was elected mayor of Burlington, and people still didn't take him seriously, but then he became a congressman and a senator. But the fact is, he is not a Democrat. He has not joined the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. He spent almost as much time attacking fellow Democrats as he has the Republicans. Joe Biden would love to make this a conversation about himself versus Donald Trump and make it about the general election. Unfortunately for him, Bernie Sanders is not going away anytime soon. Bernie Sanders is still talking about postponing the Wisconsin primary, even though the polls show him trailing by 30 points in Wisconsin. He's still talking about debating Joe Biden in April. So the problem for Joe Biden is that he can't focus entirely on Donald Trump as long as Bernie Sanders is still in the race.
Let's see. John in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, John.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I would like to start off by saying that it was not too long ago that whatever President Obama did met with scathing criticism from the Republican Party. Even when he took out Osama bin Laden, they wanted to give everybody credit, but the president, it was the SEALs, it was the military, blah, 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 blah. Now we have an inept president that cannot handle the stress of the job, that is just gaslighting all of America with the John Levitt's routine. That's the ticket. I'll use this lie today, another lie tomorrow, and I'll come up with an even different lie later on. We saw that during the impeachment ceremonies where he just lied and lied and lied. Our democracy is at risk right now. and people do not understand that. We've got Mitch McConnell, the chief obstructionist in the Senate, won't bring up any Democratic bills that have been passed by the House. Democrats should be on TV every day speaking to that issue. We wanted to do this for the country, we proposed this, and we proposed that. And Mitch McConnell is just focused on putting on his conservative, unqualified judges from Liberty University. And we need to wake up, because our democracy is at risk. And Nikita Khrushchev kind of said it back in the 60s, we don't have to destroy America. They'll destroy themselves from within, and we're on the road to doing that. I heard Steve Stivers yesterday say he just first heard about the coronavirus in the middle of March, and he had not been briefed on it. If he read the paper, he would have known about it in January.
Right. Ken Rudin?
Oh, my goodness. There's so many things John said I want to focus on. First of all, let me talk about Mitch McConnell, because Mitch McConnell, remember, when he blocked Merrick Garland from the Supreme Court, Donald Trump wasn't even running for president back then. Mitch McConnell did it on his own because the Republicans held the majority in the Senate. As far as those judges whom the Republicans have pushed through, the Trump nominee judges who the Republicans have pushed through, many of them, I agree, are not qualified. And the ABA have said they're not qualified. And the only way to remedy that is the elections in November, assuming we have elections in November. And I say that almost half kiddingly, because you never know what's going to happen with the election and the virus. But having said that, there are a bunch of Democrats like Susan Collins in Maine, like Tom Tillis in North Carolina.
You mean
like
Susan Collins is a Republican?
Yeah, I'm talking about these Republicans who are running for re-election. Susan Collins in Maine, Tom Tillis in North Carolina, Cory Gardner in Colorado, Martha McSally in Arizona. These are vulnerable Republican senators. And if you feel that the Republicans have been running roughshod over the American people, especially with these kind of judges, not to mention Brett Kavanaugh, the way to deal with that is to vote against them. As far as what Trump is doing, look, you know, he has been an entertainer all his life. The fact is that this week, not 6 months ago, this week, he retweeted something that says that Donald Trump's ratings in his daily briefings are better than The Bachelor. I mean, it's like everything is about ratings. I used to think that everything the president was doing was about the Dow, that one of the reasons he was suddenly became concerned about the coronavirus was the stock market. But it's like he talks about ratings. He said over and over again that more people are watching me now than they are watching other TV shows. And that's why he gives himself a 10. That's why he gives himself an 8+. So the only thing to say about all this is that between Mitch McConnell, who's also up for re-election, and Donald Trump, who's up for re-election, is if you like what you see, then you know what to do in November. And if you don't like what you see, you also know what to do in November.
John, thanks for that call. We'll hear from some other callers who do like what they're seeing from the president. So stand by. And my conversation with Ken Rudin, journalist, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast, will continue. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Dan Fisher, and we're talking politics in an unprecedented modern time of pandemic. Still with us, political journalist Ken Rudin, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. Questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Let's just go straight to the questions, the callers. Let's start with Dave in Columbus. Hi, Dave. You're on the air with Ken Rudin.
Yes, good morning. I guess the issue that I have is that he's obviously a proponent of, you know, the left-wing socialist party. And every time I
the Communist Party.
Basically, you know, it's a situation where everything that the president does, no matter who the commentator is, be it Rachel Maddow or whoever, everything he does is bad. And, you know, there's got to be some redeeming value in the things that he's done so far. And I never hear any positive rebuttal or suggestions of, well, how are you going to do things better? How are you going to do things differently? You know, it's just like the pandemic team that was abolished. What were they actually doing even in any other administration? And I think that needs to be expounded upon.
Yeah, I think that's a really good question.
That I think people need to go forward with.
Let me ask you this, Dave. We have a real big contrast right before us here in Ohio. We have Ohio Governor Mike DeWine, and contrast that with the president. I mean, tell me, they've done something. They've approached this radically differently. So how about that? I mean,
yeah, I think that what he's done, he's left a lot of this up to the governor, which is what he is basically supposed to do. He's the commander in chief. You know, he gives direction. But then again, it comes down on a local level, and I think it's best handled by people on a local basis. Now, the guy down in Georgia, the governor in Georgia, not doing a good job. And now, you know, if he's saying, well, he's taking direction from Trump, I think Trump has, you know, again, said, okay, we're going to leave it up to the governors. Well, at the 11th hour, he came through and said, yeah, you need to go ahead and have a lockdown and get people inside. And I think from that vantage point, he did do what he's supposed to do. But I just think to lambaste a president all the time and have no good. Turn on CNN, MSNBC. It's the most negative thing that you're going to hear. It depresses people. And likewise, I think you need a little bit of encouragement and rallying point. The same thing Franklin Roosevelt. You know, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. And from that that context, I think that people are losing sight of what the president is supposed to do and what his power actually. He can't do everything and just turn it. This isn't a dictatorship. It's not, thank God, not communist China yet. But, you know, we are headed that way. If we, and imagine if we had Joe Biden in there, he wouldn't have had a lockdown on people coming in from China. We'd have been just like Northern Italy. And it's things like that that I think you need to really engross yourself in and realize that not everything that the Democrats come up with is going to be an elixir that's going to solve all our problems.
Ken Rudin?
Well, as a member of the left-wing socialist communist conspiracy, look, Dave makes some important points. There's no question that the Democrats do not have this elixir that are going to solve everything. People may forget that even with the sainted Barack Obama, the American people were tired of Barack Obama in 2010 and 2014, even though he was elected in 2008 and 2012. The country turned against him in the midterm elections of 10 and 14 and elected a lot of Republicans to office. That is absolutely true. Would Joe Biden have done a better job than Donald Trump? Who knows? I mean, we don't know those kind of things. But to compare Trump to FDR, who did not point fingers at his... I mean, how many times did FDR talk about Herbert Hoover during the Depression? I mean, it comes to a point that after 3 years, or almost 4 years of a president, stop talking about Hillary Clinton, stop talking about her emails, stop talking about what Barack Obama may have done, and do something more constructive. You're saying that, well, you know, his job is not to be a dictator, it's up to states' rights. Well, it took him until yesterday, to call Ron DeSantis and say, look, you know, you got to stop this. This is not working. I mean, it took Trump much longer than it should have. But when you have a president who's not giving the kind of, sending the kind of urgent signals about this pandemic that has taken over the country, let alone the world, and you have people like Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida, who's following every step, following every directive from the president, that's why you have these kids on the beaches. That's why you have these kids perhaps will come down with viruses, because there's no leadership. So in a time of a crisis, we look at 9/11, George W. Bush comforted the nation and said, look, we've been attacked, but we're not going to bend. When the Challenger exploded and everybody was horrified, Ronald Reagan went before the American people and said, look, you know, this is a terrible time. We all mourn together. They didn't point fingers. And the fact is that Donald Trump, I know how you feel about Donald Trump, and you know how I feel about Donald Trump. It has nothing to do with me being a Democrat, because I'm not a Democrat. It has nothing to do with me being a liberal, because I'm not a liberal. The fact is that you have a president who has rewritten history, who has spent most of the 3 years pointing fingers to the media, to the Democrats, to even his intelligence agencies, to the doctors, the medical community. So it's one thing to say, well, you know, you don't see anything good that the president is doing. The president is doing some good. I think it's certainly on this crisis, he is doing some good. I'm just saying it's later than it should have. I'm not a Monday morning quarterback. I'm not second guessing. The fact is that many governors, including Mike DeWine, saw this crisis well before the president of the United States. I'm not part of a left-wing conspiracy. I'm part of a conspiracy of people who say, my goodness, why didn't you see this earlier when everybody else did?
Lori in Delaware, you're on the air. Hi, Lori.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I'm worried about, everybody's so worried about the Second Amendment. We're losing the First Amendment. When he's on, reporters are asking him valid questions about statements he's made, the president I'm talking about, mm-hmm. and he's going, that's fake news. If you said it on tape, it's not fake news. How is this? Everybody's going, oh, we need to congratulate. He's so busy congratulating himself, he's going to break his arm off patting himself on the back.
See, this is what Lori's saying is really the heart of how I feel. It's, I think there's, you know, you have a right to be questioned, but the fact is every press briefing, even though the president has given information, and yes, Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birx have been invaluable with their information. If Peter Alexander of NBC News says, how are you going to, what do you say to the country who is concerned? And he'll scream at him saying, you know, you're a lousy reporter. How dare you ask that question? When Jonathan Carl was a guest on my Political Junkie show this week, when he asked the question about the number of ventilators, he said, oh, that's a cutie pie kind of question. You think you're so cute by asking that question. These are legitimate questions that the journalists are asking. Do I think that the journalists have gone overboard with his criticism of Trump in his 3 years? I do. I think that there's an adversarial relationship that is just, you'd never saw with any other president before. Do I blame Trump? I do, but I think the press should know better. But when you ask a serious question, as Peter Alexander, who's a good journalist, as John Carl would do, it's serious questions at these press briefings, and the president will say, well, you're just, you know, you're just asking snarky, wise guy questions. And then when Paula, I think it was Paula Reed of CBS, it was Jim Acosta of CNN, and we know how the president feels about Jim Acosta, but he'll say all these things that President Trump has said, and the Trump will say, how dare you bring this up? The president said these things. This is, you know, this goes back to the earlier conversation with Dave, is that like own up to what you've done. Take credit for when you deserve it, but take blame. He has never taken blame for anything he's ever done. Nothing he's ever done is wrong. Lori, thank you for allowing me to vent. Oh, God.
Lori, thanks for the call. Everybody else, we don't have any more time for calls, but thanks for calling, trying. I know Ken's going to be on again, and we haven't been talking about politics much lately. We've been focusing on so many other issues unfolding every day and affecting Americans every day, but Ken Rudin, thanks for joining us, and I hope all of your family and your loved ones and everybody you know is still safe and sound.
And same to you, Ann, and same to your listeners. Your listeners ask good questions, important questions. These are our Democrats or Republicans. Everybody needs to ask these questions.
Right, right. All of them are valid. All of them are good, and my thanks for your attention. That's Ken Rudin, political journalist, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. If you want to hear more, you can check out the link on our website at wosu.org/allsides. Thanks again. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.